Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
My name's Mick and welcome to Mental Health Monday. We are back because it is Monday. It's the 8th of July today and we're going to be joined by guests from an organisation which does wonderful work in a wonderful part of town, and we're going to be talking about the work that they do, the work that they hope to continue to do as well, and we'll hopefully have a little bit of a history lesson as well in regard to where their organisation came from. We've got the team from Mary C. Cole House with us on the programme. Delighted to say Rehana, Simon and Michelle are all with us. Guys, great to see you all. How are we?
We're doing good.
Excellent, thank
Wonderful.
You.
Great to get you all on the programme as well. Mary C. Cole House. Who's Mary C. Cole? Who wants to start us
off?
That's me.
The historian.
She's not Mary C. Cole.
I'm not Mary C. Cole. No, but I do know about Mary C. Cole because I've been at Mary C. Cole House for 20 years now. But Mary C. Cole House was named after Mary C. Cole, who was a nurse in the Crimea War. Basically, she was a lady who did a lot of work around holistic therapies, looking at mental health, etc., but looking at holistic therapies. And when Mary C. Cole House opened in 1991, they wanted it to be somebody that people would recognise. And I'm sure you know that over the years, Mary C. Cole was wiped out of history. So we wanted to bring her back into history. So we named it after Mary C. Cole because she was a caring, sharing, loving woman. And that's what
Mary C. Cole House is about.
Caring, sharing and loving.
Was she doing mental health before mental health had the name mental health?
Exactly, yeah. Basically, her big role was in the Crimea War. And what she did differently to Florence Nightingale was, where Florence Nightingale was working in the hospitals, Mary was working on the fields themselves. So it wasn't like she was on one side or the other. She actually treated the soldiers on either side, and it just came from there. So she actually was dealing with mental health before it became mental health.
And presumably Florence Nightingale, that story was, for the media, was an easier one to sell.
Yeah. And also what happened was with Mary, whereas Florence Nightingale got paid to go and work at the Crimean War, Mary actually was quite an affluent woman from an affluent family, and she sold quite a bit of her own wealth to actually take herself down there. And when the war was over, she really wasn't recognised for the work that she did, and that was unfortunately because she was black.
And actually, when we talk about people of colour and mental health, this is something which has come up a couple of times on the programmes before, because so much of doing work in regard to mental health at the moment seems to be trying to make a connection with community, try and make a connection with human beings. And of course, human beings, depending on where you're from, how culturally you've grown up, you have a different reaction and different attitudes maybe to
you
towards
mental health. You do, you have a different reaction, you have a different perception of mental health. So culture and religion plays a big factor how people perceive mental health, especially in diverse cultures. So for us, it's really, really important that not only we understand the cultures and the communities that our people come from, but also making sure that the wider community, the wider mental health sector, also understands that the barriers that people from those communities experience. And one of our roles is to make sure that we reduce those barriers and ensure that people are getting access, fair access to all the services that are available around mental health.
So we've got Rehana Bashir, who's with us. She's not Mary C. Cole, but she's the operations manager at Mary C. Cole House. Simon Talkington is the advocacy development officer. And we'll speak to Michelle O'Dwyer in just a few moments' time. Simon, in terms of the issues of making connections with people within certain communities, what are those things that you've noticed? What sort of tricks have you learned over the years to sort of make sure that you can have conversations with people, that they see an open door as opposed to something which maybe isn't for them?
I think the promotion of Mary C. Cole House is a thing. people go to services and they have a perception of services, I suppose, that they're not being treated fairly. And the first thing that they'll say why they're not being treated fairly is because of the colour of the skin or the religion. But I think the problem that we've got is that, not the problem, but the country is mainly white British. So the system and services are set up for people from that background. So there are things like the Equality Act and the Mental Health Act, Code of Practice, that talks about equality, that are there but not particularly used on a daily basis by the staff. So if somebody's being treated in hospital maybe and they're not being treated the same way or getting the same things that other people are getting, then they feel like that's because the colour of their skin. We make particular efforts to go and see people when we were. We don't do the hospital work anymore, but our role in the hospital was to find those people and make sure that the staff were aware of what their needs were. So as we've been around for, 28 years, yeah. So people know of us now. That was the whole point in the first place of Mary C. Cole House, because there weren't services that were doing that. So the system's set up to work the right way. Unfortunately, not everybody's aware of what the right way is. So we're basically there to help them and make them understand what's available to them and how they can work with people. And it doesn't have to have anything to do with the law. That's not what we're here and what we're about. It's just to raise the awareness that somebody's got a need. And if you need to use the law to say, well, there it is, that's what you've got to do. But majority of time, when you mention it to people, they will actually look for a way of working with somebody to satisfy their needs individually.
And actually, we should make the point that Mary Seacole House isn't just talking about sort of mental health. It's talking about a whole host of different support right across society, often of which will have an impact on your mental health. If you kind of feel like society isn't for you or isn't working for you and people like you.
Yeah, of course, that's something that we do. I mean, one of the things that we tend to find is we get a lot of services or statutory services saying, you know, we're not getting people from these diverse communities accessing a service. They call them what they call hard-to-reach communities. Our ethos has always been any community is hard to reach if you sit in your office and expect them to come to you. It's always been the case. So what we've done is we go out to them.
Yeah.
And we've built that trust, we've built that relationship, and now people will come to us because they know us. So there's no such thing as hard-to-reach people.
The other thing is you start by saying there's a black community, there's a Muslim community, there's a Chinese community, there's an Irish community. All these different communities, but there isn't a white British community. So it's like making the barrier, not a physical one, but a mental one before you've started. So there's a difficulty there as well. I think with mental health as well, there is a difficulty in terms of services want to go out. So say it was Merseycare and they want to talk to different people in the communities from different backgrounds. And they want to instill the values of what their service is and how it would be better for people to engage at an earlier stage. Unfortunately, there is the point that you still have to be sectioned at times. So if you go out and say all the good things, then the next thing, your neighbour's getting picked up by an ambulance or potentially the police and being taken to hospital, then people sort of shy away from that a little bit. So it's a difficult job, I think, for the people who've got the local authority and Merseycare to convince people that, yeah, our services are great. So there's that area of fear. Plus what Rahana said about some cultures don't even have mental health as a concept. So
what I was going to ask you, and Michelle, you're a volunteer.
Yeah.
Are there stigmas within the sort of the communities that you've sort of reached out to?
Yeah,
spoken
I mean,
through
I've
Mary
been,
Seacole
I've been,
House?
We've just sort of thinking. Then I've been with Mary Seacole volunteering since 2016, 2017, and I work within the community. Diverse. I'm a cookery teacher, so I work all over Liverpool. And there is a sort of setback. There's a stigma to mental health, and it's breaking down barriers. And what I loved about Mary Seacole House is, like, you know, it's that open door policy. It's the welcome that people get without the stigma. You know, the fact that everybody's treated the same. They're called members, so they become a member, and it's almost like a club that people can come to. And, you know, I went to the Christmas party. It was my first Christmas party in Mary Seacole House last year, and it was just amazing. Loads of cultures coming together and supporting each other and talking, because, again, you know, it's been able to chat with other people who have got the same sort of issues, or so you're not on your own. So again, it's breaking down barriers. It's
amazing. I don't know if Rahana did a bit of nervous laughter there when you mentioned the Christmas party, like you were going to bring up something.
I was hoping she would.
Her amazing dancing. That's what it was. I mean, it was an eclectic DJ. I think he played from Bangra to rap.
Bollywood rap.
Yeah, Christmas tunes, reggae. The lot. But it was just amazing to see, and bringing people together. Doesn't matter where you're from. And it's just sort of let people talk to each other and knowing that the service is there. And also there's friendship as well.
Tell us about Mary Seacole House, the house itself. Tell us about the building, the location you've got there. Because it's in a key part of town historically as well.
We're in a Grade 2 listed building on 91 Upper Parliament Street. So it is literally like a house. And when we first started, all our services operated from that one building. So the advocacy was there, the day service were there, any carer service, all under one building. And it was an open door policy. People could come in and get to see their key worker, the support worker, etc. But over the years, we've had to change that because it's a Grade 2 listed building. It hasn't got any disabled access, and we have tried over the years. I wouldn't say we failed, it just hasn't been appropriate with the platform lifts that we had at the front and the back. It didn't work. So about 2011, we decided we need to get round this. So what we did is we've moved part of our service to the Cumbermarney Millennium Centre, which is on 4 Princess Road, which does have all the disabled access, and that's how we get round it. So we operate through the two buildings. Why are you laughing at them? Those platform lifts. It was the best we could do at the time. We've had
them removed. You weren't allowed to touch the buildings, were you, really?
You still can't touch the buildings. So
it was just a lift outside that got you into the basement, then got you into...
From the basement into the garden. Yeah, which wasn't really appropriate.
Plus, the Cumbria, it's a great community centre as well, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, you get to access lots of other people within that building.
In the Cumbria morning, yes,
do you know what?
Now.
I think that's like a good thing, though, isn't it? Because some of the stuff that we've done in the past where... Like the football, it went out into the community. The members went out. Community meant people from the community played football. So it was integrated. It wasn't like they had the mental health people over there playing football. Yeah. Everyone played.
Well, I was going to ask you, so since 1991 and obviously the centres that you've got now, has the house itself and the work you do become part of the community, that people see it? Obviously the affiliation with Granby and the work that goes on there, which is all about sort of making things at the heart of community. Do you feel like, you know, if people were to say, tell us about this part of the world, they'd mention Mary Seacole House as part of that, as opposed to it being a P.O. box address.
I think personally for me, and this is my own personal opinion, since we have moved into the Cumbria Marnie, like Michelle said, that building is occupied by several organisations. And what we've started doing is when our members do have their coffee morning on a Wednesday, or we have a cultural appreciation day, mental health awareness day, whatever it is, we use the foyer in that building, which means everybody who's accessing that building, all the offices in that building, we invite everybody. And I think it has really helped, especially with our members. Because prior to that, the level of stigma that people experienced, they were just, it was just unbelievable. But it has changed so much. Mm. And since we've moved to Cumbria, the members will say, I am from Mary Seacole House, and yes, I do have a mental problem. They own it. And
Now, here's one of the things I really wanted to get into on the programme today. In terms of stigma around mental health, which people know is widespread, and Michelle, you've already touched on it there. Are there different stigmas within black and ethnic minorities? Are there different stigmas? Because you might say, well, somebody who is from a traditional white or white Irish background might think, oh, well, I don't really want anyone to know I'm part of a mental health service. Then there might be somebody from with a Caribbean heritage, you might say, I don't really want... And they're having, although they're having different experiences, they're having the same experience, which is that they're experiencing the stigma around mental health. What sort of things are you seeing sort of specifically to cultural differences, maybe?
I think because of the cultural difference and religious differences, the majority of religions and cultures, there's no such thing as mental health. I'm from a Pakistani culture, Muslim background myself, and before I started working in Mary Seacole House, there was no such thing as mental health. I knew mental health as if you had mental health issues, you were mad. Simple as that. You were mad, crazy, the people you see in asylums and things like that. So I think, and also like in the Caribbean and African, it's all about possession and voodoo and black magic. So people are having to deal with that stuff. And what we're trying to do is educate people and promote positive mental health and say, yeah, we understand your culture and your religious factors will have a bearing on this, but at the same time, we need to look at it in a different way. We can look at it positive way that we can support people.
It's very person-centred. You know, you really do look at case by case, and it's very person-centred to that individual's needs, religion, everything, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's really a big family, which is why, Mary Seacole House is a...
Is it hard to break through that? If you've got years and years, generations and generations of heritage, culture, thoughts on a particular aspect, and you go, actually, no, it's this.
I've been working there for 20 years and I started off as the outreach worker. So one of my role was to get out there and promote Mary Seacole House, promote the services. And it was hard. It was very, very hard. What we found is over the years is you do something positive for one person, they'll go out and repeat it to somebody else. And majority of our referrals now come from word of mouth. It is not even about...
I mean, I referred somebody the other day through the cookery school. And, you know, she messaged me to say what a fantastic service she got. And the fact that she was an asylum seeker... She'd suffered due to social isolation. She was suffering with mental health issues. She didn't know where to turn. So it's ideal, the fact that people have got this place to go to, not just only if you've got mental health issues, but it's also to connect with other people.
It is building that trust. Yeah. It is about trust. And the majority of people now, they know us, they trust us. So if they come across somebody in the community who they feel needs some support, they will bring them. It's a case like, you know, we don't have to go out and ask for referrals now. Our service users do that for
us. You're so well, you're so well known. On social media as well.
Thanks to Vanessa.
Thanks to Vanessa. Fantastic,
you know,
Vanessa.
Question though that you was asking about, I think more like, do we need to change them, or do we need to help them just understand what other people are talking about? Mm. Rather than changing their perceptions of what mental health is, you can still have your idea of what mental health is, but can we find you a way that it'll
an
be better for you,
way.
Rather than just say, we don't want you to believe that anymore.
Yeah, don't
people can carry on believing what they believe. It's going to be even harder for somebody with a mental health condition to then change their whole
belief
system. And that's one of the things that I think, well, we do peer advocacy training course, it's called, but we had a psychiatrist who's not with us anymore. But one of his things was that you need to look at the person. So you think about the person before you start trying to treat any illness, because you've got to know what the person's thinking, what their belief system is and where they're coming from before you can start trying to make that person, well, what people would say, better.
Better.
I mean, there's loads of people that I've had in the past as clients who are, well, the best way of saying it is, but they would describe as happily mad. So they might have voices, they might talk to the voices, they might... You know, not be negative voices, they might be negative, but they don't mind having to go back at them. So there are different things. Mm. And I think Michelle said, each individual, people come up with these ideas that you end up developing a stereotypical view and pigeonholing people because you go, oh, you're from that background, we're going to do this for you. So it becomes a difficulty then because you're just discriminating in a different way. So rather than do that, just... Every individual, I have to keep going on about, say the same thing. There's no two people on the planet that are the same. So even if you had a pair of twins, white British background, and you were to give them the same food and the same stuff every day, there's going to be something about them that's going to be different. So you're already disadvantaging one person by treating those two people the same. Because if you like that, then you're a twin, you're like that. So that's the way sometimes services work. And they'll just go, like, well, we treat everybody the same. But we should be treating everybody with the same respect for their individual needs.
We've got Rehana, we've got Simon, we've got Michelle in the studio. Rehana is operations manager, Simon the advocacy development officer. And Michelle is a volunteer and could well be a board member and trustee because she's getting involved more and more with the work at Mary's Eagle House. This is basically a job interview.
It is. You know, they bring you in, say, oh, come and just do this. And then the next minute that you signed up to do this, that and the other. And it's like a whirlwind.
Live on the radio. And I think you're doing an excellent job so far, Michelle. And we've got to talk some more about your cooking as well.
Oh, dear.
Because of the classes that you run as well. I just wanted to mention National Diversity Awards. You had a shortlist from last year. And this year, you're the official charity partner.
We've been nominated as one of the charities that they're going to be fundraising for us. We've actually been quite lucky because Paul Cisse, who is the CEO of the National Diversity Awards, has agreed to be our patron for Mary Seacole House as well. So that's probably one of the reasons he's plugging us out there now as well. So hopefully in the foreseeable future, Paul will be around doing some work with Mary Seacole House as one of the patrons.
Excellent stuff. And there's loads about Mary Seacole House on social media. I know Vanessa works really hard to get the word out on social media as well.
The reality is quite a few of us have been there for a long time and we're not really social media savvy at all whatsoever. And Vanessa started with us about 4 years ago, and a couple of years ago she took over the website, the Twitter account, the Facebook, and since then she's got us out there. So thank you very much, Vanessa.
If somebody gets a referral, Simon, to Mary Seacole House for various different things or various different reasons, or somebody says, you know what, pop down to Mary Seacole House and have a chat, what sort of things specifically, the actual practicalities, might you offer an individual who might be maybe having a mental health issue or have a short-term, medium-term mental health issue? What sort of things practically would you be doing first and foremost? What sort of response would they get from you?
First of all, because I do advocacy, I get people who have got problems. So different range of issues, social, medical stuff. Mine are usually quite, not negative, but people that do need immediate support with services that they're not getting and they're not being heard. So when they come in, it's about finding out what the issues are and then finding out what we can do. Now, as an organisation, we have three services, really. We've got the advocacy service, we've got the day service, and we've got the family service. So the day service was more activities.
The day service is more about emotional and practical support for people who are experiencing mental health issues. The BME family service is not looking at one individual, it's looking at the family as a whole. And within that, in that service, we support a lot of people from different backgrounds, different families, people seeking asylum, people who have just got refugee status. And it's mainly dealing with a whole range of issues, including their children's. And the other thing is, when working with the families that we work in, it's not just a nuclear family, it's an extended family. So you're not only just working with mum, dad, it's brother, nephew, grandma, granddad. So that's our BME Family Service, again, providing emotional and practical support. Mm. And then we've got the advocacy
services. And I think the advocacy service, and I want to make a point of this, because a lot of people feel like advocacy's got to be adversarial, and it's got to be, you come, I'd say what some people ask me to say to professionals, but I suppose we're not supposed to swear on the radio, and I can't swear when I'm in work. So they do have some frustrations that have come out, and they come out in a sometimes
not so positive.
Yeah. So there's a issue around that sometimes, that people think, well, an advocate just comes and you just, I think you've got to develop your skills as an advocate to be able to go, and you're speaking for somebody and you're trying to get the best outcomes that person can get. And I think the people that we speak to, it's about helping them to understand that that's their role as well. So we're more like a complementary service than anything.
So you've got the two aspects, the BME family and the emotional
day service.
And day service. You've got those two aspects are kind of in-house, this is what we do. But actually, what you also do is you become a problem solver and a signposter, because it sounded like those conversations you might have might result in somebody being in the family service or the day service, mm-hmm. but also might send someone down to the benefits mm-hmm. office or mm-hmm. housing issues and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a lot of... I mean, when I started, my role was, I envisaged as going to see psychiatrists, social workers, nurses, and the hospitals. This was before statutory advocacy. And dealing with issues that people would have where they didn't feel like they were being heard. And a lot of the stuff that I'd do was about preparation for people to be able to get themselves ready, go into a meeting and express themselves. Mm. And then sometimes I wouldn't say anything going into a meeting, but I'd be thanked at the end of it, because just being there meant that they could speak.
But that's such a key thing, isn't it? Because sometimes we have this thing with mental health where we suddenly, if we give somebody a coping strategy or we teach somebody to meditate, we go, there you go, there your problem solved. But actually a lot of people in their lives have specific things they need to get somebody to solve so that they can then concentrate on themselves and their own mental health.
So that's the element of the practical support that we provide right across the board. You know, Simon will go out and represent people, making sure that the professionals that they're working will hear what the individual has to say. But then we offer practical support, and practical support is anything and everything. Mm. I mean, over the years, we have developed really good working relationship with other services, because whereas originally we just had the day service in 1991, for like 10 years, we did everything right down to benefits, etc. But then we realised we're not the experts in those places. Mm. So what we've done is developed really good working relationship with CABs, benefit maximisations, relevant people who are the experts, and then support our service users, our members, to go and get the right expert advice and support that they need. But we will still support them through that journey.
And in terms of the numbers of people, do you have sort of, not targets as such, but presumably you'll have people identified within the city area that you can reach out, or who might be reaching out to you, as opposed to people from other different parts of the community who might reach out somewhere else?
I could probably go through the caseloads and people over the years and where they've come from. Because of the relationships, like that, Hannah said, it's almost like a reciprocal thing. They know what we do, we know what they do. We have services like the local authority service, social workers, like Mersey Care with nursing and psychiatrists, who we have good relationships with. I mean, some people we don't have good relationships with, because you have to have some hard conversations sometimes, because people want something and services might not want them
like
to
it.
Do that. Yeah. So some of the stuff that has to be said has to be said. And sometimes people feel a bit put out.
Can I ask you about Mary Seacole House, focusing on people from black and racial minorities, people from different ethnic backgrounds. Is there a sense that when people come through the door that you're going to understand them and where they're from in a way that somebody who maybe looked like me maybe wouldn't quite understand in the same way? Is there a sense, look, I know what you're going through. I might not be specifically going through the same thing, but I'm coming from the same starting place as you. That's about empathy, I guess.
Definitely. And we're not a big staff team. I mean, there's 12 of us in total, and but we are all from different multicultural backgrounds. And I think we do, because we have the experience and we have the knowledge, and we also have the personal experience, so I can relate to people who come in. You know, I can say I'm Pakistani, I'm a Muslim background, so you know, when they come in and saying, well, I can't do this because it's against my religion, or I can't do this because it's against the culture, I can relate to that and I can support them. And I again, it's my personal opinion, I do believe it makes a difference to somebody. It does. And they think, well, if you can do it, you're saying it, then maybe it's okay. And that has been I think has worked right across for us, having a diverse multicultural staff team as well.
Yeah, it is helpful. I think it's sometimes, like you said, it's a bit difficult sometimes because, as I said before, people just say, we treat everyone the same, and you can't treat everyone the same. But like you said, I think if you've had if you've got experience of different cultures and being from a different culture, then you're more open to looking at what other people from different backgrounds will do and need.
And I guess this is where a good time to bring in the food. Nothing unites or celebrates a culture more than a celebration of food, right?
I've been running the cookery school for about 3 years now, and it goes out into communities throughout Liverpool, working with the project I've got at the moment is called Common Ground, and it's about bringing people together, doing adult education through food. But what's happened is over the years, I've been doing a lot more with mental health, combating social isolation. Social isolation is huge. And people are really, really suffering due to family breakdowns, different things, and that's causing mental anguish. So through food, I bring people together. I've got some stuff running in the summer holidays. We're going to do some workshops. We're going to be doing some workshops with Mary Seagull House, bringing people together. And I do diverse food, so it's food from all over the world. And it's just trying to educate people, budgeting, health, lifestyle, and obviously sitting down and talking with food, because that's something that we just don't do anymore. Yeah. So I just try and do all those things together and bringing people together through food.
And do people say, oh, Michelle's in today? Like, well, what's...
You can smell it when you're in the building. It's everywhere.
What are the highlights and stuff that they do?
Well, we had a Cultural Appreciation Day on the last one. We have this event it's called Cultural Appreciation Day, and we've been doing it now since Vanessa joined us, because it's her little baby. And the ethos of that is there's so many different cultures within our own services. Mm. We get everybody to come together. We ask people to come dress the clothes that they want, their culture... bring their own food, bring and share. And this year, Michelle did the catering with us.
Well, it wasn't. Well, we got the students. So I had some of the members of Mary Seacole House actually prepared the food for the Cultural Appreciation Day. So we did 2 days of cooking. And then they actually served the food. And it was, food from all over the world. They could then, it was lovely for them actually to take, ownership. Take pride and actually go out and serve the food and talk about the dishes that they made, and we had photos and stuff, and we did a little bit of an award ceremony. And again, it's like breaking down barriers and getting people out there talking.
Absolutely brilliant. In terms of the doors themselves, do you have an open door policy? People want to come in and knock on and say, oh, maybe you can help me.
But we had to change because, the world we're living in changed as well. So it's a case of the way Mary Seacole House now works. Everybody knows where we are, 91 Upper Parliament Street. If somebody comes and knocks on that door, regardless of whether they're a service user or been referred to as already on the books, it doesn't matter. We never send anybody away. We will bring them in, we will chat them, and if it's something that we cannot help with, we will find somewhere that they can be helped. But 9 out of 10 times, it tends to be us anyway, because when somebody does knock, they've already been sent by somebody else. They've already been seen by and gone, we can't help you.
Where might those referrals come from?
So it could be the one-stop shop, it could be the voluntary organisations, it could be anybody. They've been presented from a diverse community or from a Black, racial, minority community. They've tried to help and they go, really, this is not our fault. It goes to Mary Seacole House.
It's great to know that you've got that organisation there that, obviously, because I'm working across the city, that I've got somewhere I can refer people to where they're going to get that special treatment.
Yeah. We've never turned anybody away.
And
so we have an
open door
policy that way. We've never turned anybody away.
And I guess people say, well, could they not go to regular statutory services? But actually, because you've got the focus on, issues of discrimination and this sort of almost an inbuilt discrimination which exists, and sometimes even not even deliberately, that people will feel that they're not going to get the right service from a different statutory service. But actually coming in through the door, experiencing some of the things you've talked about there, having that empathy from the 12 workers who are there as well. It's going to be a more bespoke service,
And there's still barriers, language barriers. English is not their first language, so sending them to the one-stop shop. I understand services are limited to how much interpreting they provide or how much they spend on translating it. I understand that. So it is difficult for us to send people to mainstream services because they'll go, well, I can't understand what they're saying. So what we've done over the years is built those relationships with those services that, we've got volunteers who will help us do informal translating, informal interpreting. And we've just found a way of communicating so that whatever that person needs, we can still make sure those mainstream services can support them and provide what they need as well.
Brilliant. If people want to find out more information about Mary Seacole House, it's all over social media.
Yeah, all over social media. We've got our website, and you can just pick up the phone and speak to one of us.
Thank you all for your time. Appreciate you joining us on the programme today. Sounds like absolutely brilliant work. Rehana Bashir, Operations Manager, Simon Talkington, Advocacy Development Officer, and Michelle O'Dwyer, Volunteer and future board member as well. I thought she did very well.
Thank you for having us.
Positive feedback in terms of the job interview the job. As well. Absolutely. Sounds good enough to me. Thank you.
No pressure.
Mental Health Monday.
On Radio City Talk.
With Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.